Hey Kyle, would you ever take a bullet for a woman?
No. What? No.
Iggy Pop! Amen! Let it rock!
I'm a fucking idiot.
Red meat, we crave sustenance.
I'm an artist.
Hello, my name is Jimmy Cody.
Why don't you have some fun?
Fun!
Tommy,
that's a kingpin.
Whoever she is, I'm gonna find her and I'm gonna hurt her.
I've spent the past 3 years learning Finnish!
I'm always home, I'm uncool.
This is a process of dehypnotization.
Shut up!
Hi there, folks, and welcome to this week's edition of the P.S. I Love Hoffman podcast, our love letter to the remarkable career of the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm Brian Rodriguez.
And I'm Kyle Reinfried.
We're always home, we're always uncool, and we're always ready to talk great movies. Today's a very special day in the podcast, isn't it, Kyle?
Indeed it is. We have our first guest!
And ladies and gentlemen, it's none other than the godfather himself, Joey Lewandowski. Joey, what's up, man?
Hi.
Woo! Oh, man, we're so excited to have you here.
We're so stoked to have you on.
First guest, welcome.
I mean, I want to say that every day here is a very special day, but it's also a very special day because I did not see the weirdo Russian movie Joey Breaker, but of the five Hoffman movies that I've seen so far that you've done, this is far and away my favorite. Like, this is so... I love this movie.
Yeah.
I never saw it before. I heard got such good things about. And when you guys want to do this podcast, I was like, you can do it. I have two requests. I want to be on this one, and I want to be on one episode way down the line that I won't spoil yet. But I just heard such good things about this, and it did not disappoint.
Oh, so wait, you chose this. Okay, people... He had carte blanche.
I did.
Yeah, you could have. We let you choose anything, obviously. Well.
And you chose that without having seen the film?
I'm pretty sure when he died, I read like an article like five roles that you didn't know that he did that you want to see him in, or something like that. And this was on there. There were other ones that were more recent. I think like, you know, like God's Pocket might have been on there. Stuff that wasn't super mainstream because people have seen him in. You know, the Paul Thomas Anderson movies, you guys have talked about that a lot. People have seen him in the Hunger Games movies. People know him from things, but there's, you know, these smaller roles that either early in his career or later in his career that just sort of movies that fly under the radar. I think it was a list of those, and so I just had on my list for, like, years, I guess since he died, My Boyfriend's Back, and the reason that I added to my list, as my little note was for Philip Seymour Hoffman, so...
Yeah, that's great. I mean, we were going to ask you that, because I was super curious if you'd seen it or not. By the way, for those of you who don't know, Joey is the founder or co-founder of the Cage Club.
Yeah, tell us a little bit of that. Give it give it the straight up to our audience, Joey.
So, years ago, I hated Nicolas Cage, and then I had a friend when I worked at Best Buy. He loved Nicolas Cage, and he sort of converted me to the Church of Cage. And so, he and I were trying to buy all the movies, and I had like 20, and at that point, he had like 75 movies or something like that. And then one day, Best Buy had, you know, this was years after I worked there, but BestBuy.com had a one-day sale. It was Nicolas Cage movies on Blu-ray and DVD.
I think I remember that day.
Wow.
I spent like $100, and I got like 12 new movies.
Damn.
And I was like, well, I guess I'm going to go buy them all now. And I posted on Facebook, like, hey, I'm, you know, I just spent this, like, I just posted a screenshot. It was like, you know, 12 random movies. They're all like $6 or $7 or $8. And Mike Manzi was like, you know, I might do this too. And then we were like, well, if we're both going to buy it, like, why don't we do something with it? And then it just became a podcast pretty quickly. And then, you know, within a month, he and I both owned close to 100% of all of his movies. And right. Then, you know, a couple months later, we started recording. We did, which is, it's still stupid. We did 3 a week for 6 months.
Wow.
I figured out because I was editing them all.
That's crazy.
Between writing reviews, watching the movies, recording the podcast, editing the podcast, doing screenshots, you know, posting to the website and everything, I was spending about 25 hours a week.
That's crazy.
While working a full-time job.
Yeah.
You know, for 20 people an episode. I mean, the numbers.
And you were living in Austin at the time, right?
I was living in Austin. We were doing everything over Skype.
Yeah, it's crazy.
We've since improved our recording capabilities.
Okay.
Well, you've clearly been an inspiration to us here.
Yeah, so Mike Manzi is the glue. Although we both went to the same college, we did not know one another. I knew Mike Manzi.
Yeah, I didn't even know if I don't know because I didn't know him at college either. I met him after the
That's
fact.
That's crazy.
Yeah, there's a couple people that like also Chris Mattiello,
yeah.
Who's the host of the Now and Again podcast on our network, also went to our college, and I didn't know him there It's just, it's weird how you meet people after the fact that you would have gotten along really well with, you know, at college, and now here we are all united by, you know, these film and nostalgia podcasts. All
right.
About Cage or Philip Seymour Hoffman or the Now That's What I Call Music.
Yeah, so two questions for you. What is your favorite Cage film, and which of your podcasts do you, which episode do you like the most and you think is, like, the most fun you had?
So my favorite Cage film is Wild at Heart.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Very good.
It's maybe my favorite movie of all time. Wow. I think right now it's number two. It's The Matrix. The Matrix is number one, which is a main reason why we chose Keanu and why we're doing Keanu. Mike and I are in the tail end of his career
right now.
It's
a tentpole blockbuster. It changed the way of blockbuster filmmaking.
Sure did. Mike and I did, you know, we did like 84 Cage so far. We've done close to 60 Keanu. We did all of Shia's movies, Shia LaBeouf movies.
That's right, yeah.
We've had some really, really fun episodes. On Shia, my favorite one was Monkey Business, which is one of his first films. It's this 90-minute long, straight-to-DVD. It's, you know, like, there's lots of bad movie podcasts out there. This is a movie that, like, deserves to be on those because it's so bad, so wonderfully bad, and just, like, it just, none of the decisions make sense, and it's a joy to watch. So Mike and I, you know, all these Shia movies, especially as we got to the end where he's a younger kid, sort of here, like, you guys see, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman on screen for a minute.
Yeah.
Right? And you're like, okay, I'm still going to talk about the movie for 45 minutes or an hour. By that point, you know, we had recorded so many that were just like, well, he's, you know, he's either barely on screen or it's a terrible kids movie or whatever. We're not going to talk about it. But here, we talked about Monkey Business literally for 2 hours.
Wow, just
this
really?
Joyful, wonderful, weird train wreck of a movie.
That's kind
of
cool.
So that's really
it's
good.
A lot of fun.
I'll have to check out that episode. So, we've been saying it a lot on the podcast. We can't wait till we get to his media roles. He's definitely someone that paid his dues.
Yeah, Hoffman, yeah.
And yes, Hoffman. And so what is your earliest memory? What do you think is the first film you saw with him in it? And then what would you say is your favorite film?
Yeah,
Hoffman
like when did
film?
You become conscious of Philip Seymour Hoffman?
The first one of his I saw was Twister, but I didn't know.
I think that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
But I didn't know who he was. I don't even remember. Like, I don't remember Twister because I was like 8 when Twister came out.
Okay.
And I remember my dad loves it, so I saw it probably a bunch, but I don't remember anything. I also confused that movie with Contact. You know, they're about two very different
okay.
things. I just confuse those two. I think just because like both DVD covers are probably blue and they're both movies that my dad loves and just were sort of always on.
That's funny. That's funny because a lot of people confuse Helen Hunt and Jodie Foster.
Oh, I can see that.
Yeah, also that. I also couldn't really tell you. I guess, yeah, even if you, like, if you're like, I'll give you $1,000 if you get it right or I'll kill you if you're wrong. Like, I wouldn't play that game. I don't know who's in what movie. Like, I can't separate those two movies in my head. I think
wow.
The first time I remember being aware of him was in Happiness.
Mm. Wow, okay. It's a great
because
film. Creepy film, weird film.
I was like, what is this? Like, and like, I didn't, that wasn't a role that made me want to see more of him. In fact, it probably made me want to see less.
Well, because you see a lot of him in the film.
It's
very
so
true.
Gross.
Can't wait
yeah.
to talk about
and
that
you guys
one.
Will get to that before too long, but so I remember that's an early one I was just like, oh, wow, like, yeah. I don't, ooh, okay.
So favorite Philip Seymour Hoffman role?
Favorite role? I don't know. I mean, I think I think you're going to get the same answer from everything. I think it's either
okay.
people are going to say a Paul Thomas Anderson movie or Synecdoche, New York, I think.
Okay.
That's fair. We have gotten a lot of that just from polling.
I think just because
people.
I think those are like, those are the ones that everybody's seen. Those are some of his best movies. I think, you know, indisputably best movies. But I mean, like you guys have been saying, even in movies where I don't really love the movie, he's always very, very good at them.
Yeah, and I feel like we're not just saying that. Like, it's something we truly, objectively believe. We're fans, but anytime we watch him in something, we have yet to see, like, a role of his where we're like, ah, he just mailed it in here, or something like that.
Well, that's what reminds me. I mean, it's a completely different thing, but, like, Mike and I keep talking about how every movie that Nicolas Cage is in, even his recent ones that have mostly, for the most part, have not been as good as the stuff he did early in his career, he's always the best part in these movies.
Oh, yeah, he gives it his all.
And yeah, that's very fair, yeah.
Yeah, but Keanu, you know, I was really excited to do Keanu, and then, you know, for a couple different reasons, we've both sort of been a little bit burnt out by this, because, like, he's just not very good in certain, like, a lot of movies. And it's a different thing because we see Cage in no matter what he does, even when the movie's bad, you're like, okay, I'm gonna see something here that I maybe have never seen before. Or I'm going to see something that, like, he's really trying here, even though the rest of the people in this film are sort of walking through it. Keanu, just, like, sometimes, like, just things don't click.
Yeah, he's got that laid-backness to him.
Maybe that's it.
But how about do we want to...
Yeah, so, Kyle, just for the audience, tell us what this beautiful film, My Boyfriend's Back, is about.
All right, everyone, I hope you enjoy my summary. My Boyfriend's Back is the 1993 camptastic film about a high school boy named Johnny who yearns for the love of his childhood crush, Missy McLeod. Oh man, that's such a great name. And enlisting the help of his friend Eddie, he plans a heroic ruse that goes awry, and he is shot dead, only to come back and have to adjust to high school life as a zombie. See what I did there?
Yeah, that was good. So, by the way, I know you love this movie, Joey. This is his lowest rated movie according to Rotten Tomatoes.
Is it really?
14%, yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Really?
Yeah. And we've seen some worse ones, so I don't understand that.
Yeah. I mean,
comedy is so subjective, but like there was literally not anything in this movie that like struck a bad note for me. I guess it's really like if you're in, you're gonna be all in, but if you don't buy in, I can see this being a really annoying movie.
yeah, see, so that's kind of what happened to me, but I did buy in finally. It's like, I got it. It's very, it just struck me as, I mean, I love the beginning, but just the whole quick acceptance by his parents, like that really threw, I didn't think it was going to go that direction, because neither of us had seen it either, correct?
Yeah, I hadn't seen it.
So,
I mean,
yeah.
That comic book start, I did like that. Like, it reminded me of another classic, I guess a little bit before, but, you know, one of my favorite films, Better Off Dead. And I wasn't sure if, like, how the zombie angle was going to go. So I'm like, oh, is this going to be, like, a dark comedy like that? But it ended up being more camp. Still, I liked those elements there.
Tell us more, Joey. What was your initial thoughts of the film, just, like, right from the get-go?
So the comic book opening was cool. I didn't like the voiceover.
No, I agree with that.
It set it up because I was just like, oh, it's kind of like, you know, a comic book. And so when it came back, I was like, I'm still not crazy about it, but I was able to, like, it was there for a reason. And maybe the comic book intro was there to sort of give a reason for why the voiceover had to be there or why it should be there, which it's still not great, but, like, it's okay. But I don't know what it was. Just, you know, I was so quick to accept their acceptance and just like, oh, he's just back because it, like, I don't know. I was just on board and everybody was just so, I don't even know. Like, it's hard to describe how casual everyone is. They're just like, oh, he's a zombie. He's back. Like, of course he needs to eat people. Like, that's just like, it's just the thing.
Yeah.
I just love it.
That's definitely so. I mean, definitely falls. I mean, it's totally a parody or, I mean, satire on high school life. From his hunger, obviously, sexual lust, from decaying being like the realm of acne, and then people ousting him, not being cool and stuff like that. I mean, it all falls into that, but they just go very. It's not just a metaphor in the film. They just pretty much, without saying it, that's what it is. You know. Does that make sense? What I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. Like, they sell this pretty fast. There's no ambiguity with just, you know, in terms of, like, the rules of this world or something. There's no, it's not like sci-fi, like deep sci-fi. It just sort of exists. And like you said, Joe, if you buy in right away, you're not going to have a problem with that. If you're trying to figure out what's going on and if you're overanalyzing this one, you're not going to enjoy it.
And I also loved it from the beginning because our guy, the reason we're here, Philip Seymour Hoffman, is sort of this lackey to, you know, basically the quarterback of the football team in his first film. And he's the star of my favorite TV show of all time. We got Matthew Fox, Jack from Lost. And like, he looks the same. Like, he looks
exactly the same.
It's crazy.
I really did love. I'm very curious if Philip Seymour Hoffman said something to. So the director is Bob, can someone help me pronounce his last name?
Bob Balaban.
Bob Balaban.
It's like a tongue twister sometimes. You want to, like, add something to it. So many B's. So he's obviously, I mean, if you saw his face, you'd recognize him, people. And I'm very curious if he said to Philip Seymour Hoffman or Philip Seymour Hoffman said to him, like, how over the top can I go with this? Because he has a Looney Tune goon vibe to him, or just even an exaggeration of a high school goon. Like the, not just a backwards baseball cap, but it's like turned up, you know, flipped up in a weird way. And he's got that slack jaw, just like, yeah, boss, you know, like just total drone. And I love it. I loved everything.
But I think it fits perfectly into the movie, and it also fits perfectly into the world where his name is Chuck, his dad is Big Chuck, and his younger brother is Little Chuck.
Oh, I love that.
Like, yeah.
It's all a cartoon. None of it's supposed to be taken literally, I guess. And I was, you know, I was kind of disappointed. I'm sort of jumping ahead here. But after Johnny comes back from the dead as a zombie, and Chuck, Philip Seymour Hoffman, goes to kill him and then accidentally axes himself in the head and kills himself, I was really expecting him to come back.
Yeah, you know, that would have been,
I thought,
perfect.
That we're going to have like a couple zombies and it's going to, you know, multiply.
Yeah. It did seem like it was going that way. And
right. I would have loved to have seen that character as a zombie.
Yeah,
like,
and it would have been great if they
dead-eyed
bonded.
And stupid.
Yeah, that or like they, or if it went in a different way and they bonded somehow and it showed like an acceptance of,
wow,
the jock nerd. Not that, I mean.
You could create the universe of this film, Kyle. No, I definitely saw, like, he's zombie-like in real life, you know? He's brain-dead, and he's just follows Matthew Fox's character around, so I would have loved to see him come back as a zombie.
I looked up, obviously, director, writer. I see some similarities as far as the satire to Arrested Development, and that's the same writer. His name is Dean Laurie.
Oh, he became a writer for Arrested Development?
Yeah.
Well,
he also
cool.
wrote Major Pain, a pretty good 90s comedy.
Saw that in the theater.
Really? That's awesome.
Yeah, birthday
but,
party.
But Arrested Development, one of your favorite shows, right?
Yeah.
And I see some similar, just the comment on suburbia and just, you know, like the family unit and stuff like that, because definitely Johnny's parents, again, their acceptance right away. And what's that actor's name? He was the father on, or the grandfather on
Edward Herrmann.
Gilmore Girls.
I love Edward Herrmann.
Rest in peace.
Every time I see him, I just get super excited. Like, he used to do like the Dodge commercials. I'm pretty sure he played FDR once. Like, he's super cool. And like, he definitely has like that. Oh, I think he's the dad in Richie Rich as well.
Yes.
And is he the dad in Wolf of Wall Street too? Or no?
No, that's Rob Reiner.
Oh, right. Who is he in? He's the Wolf of Wall Street. I'm looking at his IMDb right now. Who's he playing that? Do you remember?
He's in Wolf of Wall Street because he died recently, so it must have been like one of the last.
No, Wolf of Wall Street's already 3 years ago.
So he died within the last 3 years then, yeah.
Yeah, he just died like last year.
Okay. Who is he in Wolf of Wall Street?
I don't know. I'm going to look it up.
Yeah.
That I got to see.
What I also liked about the parents is that they both seem like, both the dad and the mom seem like they could have been played by Bob Balaban in like other one of his movies. Like, I feel like they're just like, act like me.
Yeah.
Like, all right, we got it.
That's super fair, yeah.
So Bob Balaban took on like the Woody Allen theory, just, you know, play someone exactly like me.
Oh, he was the voice of Stratton Oakmont in that opening commercial that starts the movie where the lion's walking through the office.
Okay, yeah,
he's the
yeah.
voice.
That,
so he's,
I guess, okay. That makes sense.
He's in it, but he's not in it.
Yeah, okay, now that makes more sense. I mean, he's got a great voice.
Missy McLeod, thoughts? Would you?
She's very pretty.
Yes, she is.
Why wasn't she in everything?
Would you create the ruse of getting her convenience store robbed and being the hero to get her attention?
Would I?
Yeah, either of you.
She's very pretty. I don't know if I would go to those lengths.
Yeah, you're already screwed up as a little kid not giving her a gift.
I actually, like, that part, like, tugged at my heartstrings, because I feel like I'd been there. Like, I, like, should have asked this girl out, and I didn't. And that's kind of like all the movies I wrote in high school. So this is not a negative thing, but reminds me of a movie like I would have loved to write or make in high school.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
I think it's a compliment to it, because it just really runs true of how much it just strikes to the core of that, like there's not many high school films out there that I'm like, wow, that reminded me of high school. Like, even like Superbad was one of the few that at least like the actors seemed to be of the proper age.
But wasn't Jonah Hill not?
No, he wasn't. He was only a year younger than Seth Rogen, and they told him he was too old to play.
Yeah,
that role.
That's right.
But
in this movie, Andrew Lowry plays Johnny, and he's, I think, 23. He looks like he's 30.
Yeah.
No, yeah. The looks of the kids, yes, but the tone, like what they go through.
Okay. I was gonna say, I looked that up too. I'm like, is this guy 30? What the hell?
He looks like, I mean, I never really want to see remakes. I think this could be a really good one for a remake, but the only guy, he looks so much like Rob Hubel that I kind of want to see a remake with Rob Hubel, except Rob Hubel's now like 40, so that wouldn't work to play him as a high schooler, but this guy just looks like an early 90s Rob Hubel, and I was just like, oh, like I could see him in this role.
Okay. Okay.
I can't believe that we're burying the lead, that there's another massive actor in this film on screen for 3 seconds.
Yes, another. It was his debut as well, right?
That's according to IMDb. Yeah,
it is. It happens so quickly that I was like, that couldn't have been.
Yeah, I thought. Well, that was the whole thing. Like, I had read that before, and so, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, a lot of people would probably say Dazed and Confused. I mean, he always tells that story that I think he was picked out of a bar, right? Like in Dazed and Confused. So
yeah, because he's from Texas, and they were like,
and this was filmed in Texas. I looked
it up.
Oh,
this was filmed in Texas.
Yeah, so I guess it makes sense.
Yeah. Okay, that's cool. So yeah, he's only in it for. So I had read that this was his debut film, and when he comes on the screen, I'm like, okay, Matthew McConaughey, and then that's his line. Like as soon as I had that thought. His role is over. He's just sitting with, I'm assuming it was his girlfriend and his friend, and they see Johnny and Missy at the movie theaters. But, I mean, that was just another great moment of showing how kids get news of, you know, like, high school gossip and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's just crazy. I mean, I love when we're seeing, like, the background characters are, like, amazing in some of these films, and it's, I guess, like, you gotta give credit to casting directors. They see something in these people, and
I was really hoping this film was going to have... It has a dance in it. I was hoping it was going to be one of those great... Like, how the, like a lot of 80s movies had great high school dance moments. Even from... I mean, Back to the Future, it's a 50s dance, but it's an 80s movie. And then Better Off Dead and just...
E.G. Daily.
What's that? Yeah, E.G. Oh, E.G. Daily. I love E.G. Daily.
And that scene. Or even like 90s movies. I think like... Oh, what's that movie with the girl with the glasses takes them all... Oh, She's All That.
Yeah.
Has like Usher as like the DJ there.
Awesome.
This not really good prom scene, but I think we're getting ahead of ourselves here. Oh, by the way, before I forget, that friend, what do you remember his name? The friend who he goes with, like he says
the character's name is Eddie.
Eddie. Okay, yeah, he's a best friend, but he's like a dick. I feel like I'm like that to a lot of people in their lives.
I will 100% agree with that.
I definitely connected most with Eddie in this film.
Yeah, I think a lot of I would too in a way, like I didn't really feel like because Johnny's I mean he's not uncool but he's just like an average Joe.
Yeah, that's fair.
Is Eddie the one who looks like Jonah Hill who tries to bite his arm?
Yeah,
yes,
yeah, that's okay. Eddie.
He kind of also reminded me of he falls into that like. Similar character feel and even look to like Doogie Howser's friend and like just those like you know the ancillary best friend.
Yeah, he's just the classic best friend except that he's like a little bit more quiet and kind of a dick.
Let's see here. I don't think that I love the movie, but I don't think that his plan, like I don't know, I guess you just sort of accept that it's gonna work, but it's weird how it works because he's a guy that she knows. It's not like he's a complete stranger. But she's dating Matthew Fox. Even if he hadn't asked her to prom, I don't know that she would have said yes to Johnny. And then, I mean, he dies for her, which is romantic, question mark? But then when he comes back, she's put off until he really puts out... What does he say to her? Like, you know, I died for you. And then the girls at the salon are like, my boyfriend won't even... What's that line?
Oh, I wrote it down.
I wrote it down too. It is. Oh, God.
I'm looking right now.
God, my boyfriend won't even pump gas for me.
Yes.
And so, they wouldn't have that problem if they lived in New Jersey.
Right. and then you ate someone just to go to prom with me? Like, it's such a weird, twisted love story, but I just loved it.
There definitely are some moments I'm like, and this could, like, you could definitely say it's getting sexual, even in its language through the, you know, screenplay and everything.
Did you guys know that this was did you read that this was the, Missy's house was the same house used in Nightmare on Elm Street?
Yes, I did read that.
Oh, I didn't see that. That's awesome.
That's a really that's a fun. Boy, that's a
lots of undead things happen in that house.
Another fact that I read interesting was that Renee Zellweger was originally in the first cut of this film and in the salon, but they cut her.
Was this going to be, I saw that, but I didn't do any research. Was this going to be her first movie?
This would have been her first movie as well. And it would have been, no, not the first time, because we've done films that Philip Seymour Hoffman will be in another film with, but they reteam for Cold Mountain.
Yeah, they do. I mean, and there's another person that Philip Seymour Hoffman later teams up with in this film.
Oh, really?
Who? Did you not catch this?
No, I'm kind of upset, but please, school me.
So, remember there's that weird gravedigger character? Or I don't know if he's a gravedigger, like just the undertaker at the cemetery?
Sure. He's in the beginning, and he's like in the
end. And he gives like a little bit of a speech to the town folks in the end. He's actually the dad in Along Came Polly, who kind of like reams Philip Seymour Hoffman out at the end. You know, he doesn't talk the whole movie, and then like he...
Oh, that's... I never would have... I can't even... Having just seen this film, I can't picture his face.
Yeah, I recognize his face. However, I don't think they share any screen time in this film, so it probably doesn't count. So,
huh.
But I guess they shared a set with
the
director.
No, but it's a similar, like, telling of what's what to
it. No, it is, which is kind of funny. So, basically, I guess we should set the premise for those of who haven't seen this, really. Like,
yes, a little bit more in depth than my summary said. I mean, so let's see. We've said that he goes, he has the hots for this girl. He goes to the convenience store, has a plan to look like his buddy Eddie is robbing it. He's going to save the day. But just unfortunately, at the same time, another guy tries to rob this convenience store.
Yeah, some rando criminal.
Yeah, and he ends up getting shot and dying and, like, embalmed and everything and buried, and people are crying. And then he just wakes up as a zombie and comes out of the dirt. And he's told by that guy not to leave the grounds. So was that... Now, what did you guys think of that? Did that mean because he left the graveyard area, he started decomposing? Do you think that's how it worked? Like, I thought there was going to be a little bit more rules and, like...
Yeah, like I said, there's no real universe in this, and that's okay. There's no real, like, rules like that. I'm not sure, because he... So, yeah, are we led to believe that if he stayed on the grounds of the cemetery, he just wouldn't decay? But then what's the point? Like, why come back from the dead?
Yeah. What do you think, Joey?
I don't know. I mean, there's the other woman that he goes to see, right? That,
yeah, Cloris Leachman.
Yeah, that came back to life 15 years ago on Thanksgiving.
Mm.
And I guess, but like, what kind of life? I mean, so what's weird about him coming back in terms of, I guess, his motivation is that he's almost like a ghost more than a zombie. He kind of like has unfinished business, right?
Yeah.
That
sure.
Like, we find out at the very end that he wasn't supposed to die, that the robber at the convenience store was supposed to like slip on coffee or something,
yeah.
And he wasn't actually supposed to get shot there. So after he dies the second time, he's sent up to what looks like heaven, but I guess it's just like the pearly gates of heaven.
Yeah.
To be judged. And he's like, well, you have to go back down and like, you know,
yeah, it was a
that
mistake.
Was sort of, you know, yeah, whether you're like a good person or a bad person. And so we get put back down to where he at the convenience store again, and once again he takes the bullet for her, but he doesn't actually get, or he gets shot, but it hits him in the locket that he was going to give her. So
yeah.
it's strange. In that sense, right?
But yeah, like, why was he wearing the gift that he was going to give her?
I don't know, but also what makes me... So going back to what we were talking about before, like, you know, he leaves the graveyard, even though the gravekeeper tells him not to,
mm-hmm.
And he starts to decompose, and he goes to Cloris Leachman, and she's like, you need to eat. Like, it's not an exact science, which I love. She's just like, you know, sometimes you have to eat an arm, sometimes you have to eat like, a whole person. Like, who knows? Like, you'll figure it out. But, like, yeah. If he had done that, right, and, like, continued, and say he, like, lived that way for 10 years or 20 years, would he have then gone to heaven?
Interesting.
I understand that, like, you know, picking apart the logic of a horror comedy, like, is not necessarily, you know, the best way to go, but I'm just curious, like, what would have happened?
No, that is definitely interesting, and I totally agree with you, but I think they put all their eggs in the basket again with, like, the metaphors and obviously her little speech to him and saying, like, everyone's different, I don't know, you know, like, when's what. It's a very, like, it's a kind of like a, I never got a traditional sex talk from my parents or any adult figure, but
maybe after they hear this, they'll give you one.
I think they just looked at me, and when he's a lost cause, he's a walking Bible. But I think that's what they ended up doing. Instead of creating these rules and following like the horror tropes that we've come to know, that obviously like a film like Scream literally teaches us through Jamie Kennedy's character, they decided to go just with like the straight up like high school like metaphors. But can we address probably the biggest problem with this film, the elephant in the room right now? Why is the film called My Boyfriend's Back?
Oh yeah, I wrote this down too. It like he was never her boyfriend.
No,
it's just to tie it to the song, really. What was the original title?
It's yeah.
We discussed it before. Johnny Zombie.
Johnny Zombie. Which title do you like more, Joey?
Well, Johnny Zombie sounds like a punk band.
It does. It does, or a show now on the CW.
Yeah. So I thought the same thing you guys thought, that it doesn't make, because he's never her boyfriend. It would be like if Matthew Fox came back.
Yeah.
That he died. She starts to date Johnny, and then Matthew Fox comes back, and he has to like fend off, sort of like Scott Pilgrim-y, kind of like he has to fend off this like evil ex cool zombie.
Yeah, I actually thought that would be cool.
That's a cool movie too.
Do they play the song in the movie at all? Like the, I don't, you know, it's that 60s female
group. I
don't
think so.
It's definitely, it's in, I remember, so I had not seen, again, I had not seen this film before, but I remember seeing a version of this trailer and thinking, I was actually was creeped out as a little kid seeing, she's like, did your ear just fall off? And I just remember being weirded out by that. But I know there's a trailer out there where they use that song. And, but I was expecting when it like wasn't playing or like during the credits or something like that, you know, like when they take a song and they do like a, you know, that decade's version of it. I thought there was going to be like a new band of the time that covered that song, but nope.
Like a grunge version?
Yeah, like a grunge, or even like, is that too early for ska's kind of around then, or like, or even like some kind of punk version.
Well, I feel like this film definitely didn't have like the budget for that, or, you know, I mean, like if you even look at his makeup, it's not that great.
No. Well, they do the whole gag when his nose falls off, he's facing away, and you never see that, really. That's like a
that's
little
true.
Off. So, yeah, definitely minimal budget on this.
I actually think the title Johnny Zombie would have been better for the film. I mean, at least at the time, for the way it was received, because Johnny Zombie, to me, actually seems like, you know those, like, beach comedy films of the 60s? It feels like that. And it kind of has the tone of, like, a beach comedy film. Where,
well,
like,
yeah, definitely, again, what those beach comedies did, this would be, like, a, again, like, just feeling like a satire on it, so I'd be for that, and definitely in the early 90s, I mean, now we're in a zombie phenomenon with, like, one of the, you know, highest-rated TV shows of all time, and just so many movies out there, but at the time, I think Johnny Zombie would have really grabbed people's attentions and brought them into the theaters, but, I mean, hey, we got My Boyfriend's Back.
Are there any, when I was, like, watching this, there was only two other, like, comedy zombie films that I thought of, and that's obviously Shaun of the Dead.
Okay.
And there was that one, Warm Bodies.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you guys want to hear a story? So, okay.
Yes,
so
please.
In college, when I was in Tobin Addington's class, Tobin, who's been on many episodes of Cage Club and Keanu Club.
Yeah, definitely.
He's doing a new project with us. You know, I took a screenwriting class just so I could have another class with him, because he's such a good guy.
Oh, he's awesome.
I love hearing
him
talk, just talking about movies. And I was like, I don't have any interest in writing screenplays, but I want to be in this class with him. I also took visual storytelling for the same reason, and then he got swapped out last minute, and I was like, ugh. But anyway, at the beginning of the semester for writing the screenplay, you had to come up with three ideas for a script. And so I came in with three, and one was something I don't even remember. It was stupid. I honestly can't even remember what it was. The one that I wound up writing was a stand-up comedian is trying to get to his some kind of gig in a post-apocalypse, like the apocalypse happens, and he was supposed to go on like a road trip. He's trying to get to his gig or whatever. I like that idea, but I don't really want to write the one that I wanted to write. that no one in the class, including Tobin, he doesn't remember this, but including Tobin didn't think this was a good idea, was it was Romeo and Juliet,
okay,
but Romeo's a zombie, and it's also it's a musical. And people were like, that's ooh, stupid. Like, that's never going to happen. And then literally 2 years later, Warm Bodies comes out. I'm like, motherfucker, like, come on.
It's always how it happens, and it sucks.
Like, not that I would have done anything, because I really like Warm Bodies.
Yeah.
But, like, I never would have done something like that, and also it wasn't a musical, but, like, that's sort of, you know, there's lots of, I mean, Swiss Army Man is sort of like a zombie sort of love story. Like, there's all these, like, dead people love stories kind of since then. I mean, Twilight has all sort of happened since then. That's like a weird...
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
And vampire nobody thought zombie. It was a good idea. And I'm like, I'm still mad about it.
Honestly, Joey, I have a very similar... I'll keep it brief because it would get off topic, but I have a very similar story to you, and that's that I made a film called Hotwired, and long story short, it's about a guy that orders a robot girlfriend and programs her to his liking, and then cut to more years, like five years later or something like that, and then her came out. I'm like, what a what a simpler, like, it's a software, and I went and I built this robot that looked like Rosie from the Jetsons. Like, that was part of the humor, that it was that I wanted people to think that it was going to be like a weird science hot robot computer thing, and then she comes out. But yeah, I could, so point being, I feel for you, Joey.
The lines of these podcasts could be paved with the dead skeletons of should have, could have, would have screenplays, that's for sure.
That's fair. So another question I have for both of you. Missy, does she kind of just fall for Johnny pretty easily once he comes back?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, it happens too quickly, but I think it's once she realizes how... Well, I guess it's sort of the ultimate sort of, you know, it's a hashtag problematic term, but like the friend zone, which is... There's lots of reasons why that's a terrible term to use, but... You know, it's this guy who, like, he's this really great guy who's always loved her and she's never given him the time of day. And then I think it's sort of like she spends time with him. She's like, oh, he's actually, like, a good guy. And then, you know, Matthew Fox is ostensibly a jerk. Like, they had been broken up, right?
Yeah.
And so they get back together at the beginning of the movie when he asks her to prom. But it happens a little quickly. I think it really sinks in when she realizes that he died for her, that he ate a person for her, that he, like, he will do anything to, like, prove his love. Like, he's doing these grand romantic gestures mm-hmm. in death or at death that he never did in life. Like, maybe if he had done something to that extent earlier in life, they would have been together.
Which
they
worked
well together.
Which all of us should if you want to find your true love.
Yeah, take a bullet for a girl.
Exactly. Lose an ear for a girl.
But I agree with you that that's what makes her ultimately like fall in love with him versus being interested, but she does just get too interested into him like way too fast. But I think it falls more into the forbidden fruit kind of, then he comes back, and not that he's a bad boy, it's not like it's Teen Wolf where he comes back and he's like hot man on campus, but still it's that like, ooh, like it's the cliche of the girl like wanting the forbidden fruit and the mysterious guy. I think that kind of, you know, pushes the earlier her talking to him and going out with him.
Yeah, I mean, this is an era where, like, especially like these kind of films, the female characters aren't very like fleshed out. Like,
yeah.
We know this. It's not...
Encino Man, they're just like, you know, quiet, you know, guy that just goes gunzongas.
Oh, so this is actually something... So when we did Cage Club, we counted the number of times Nicolas Cage died. So I think what you guys need to do... I don't know... I'm trying to think of other Philip Seymour Hoffman movies, and obviously I don't want to do spoilers for movies that haven't come yet, but I can't think of too many times he's died, but... Here's a big one where he dies, you know,
early on.
And it's
super important death.
Yeah, so again...
It's the death that gives life to our main character.
Very true. Is he... Who else does he munch on in the
Well,
film?
He tries to munch on his buddy, right?
Yeah.
He tries to... He thinks about eating a fat girl, but she's like...
Yeah, get away from me, zombie boy, or whatever.
Yeah. And then it's this... kind of, I guess, Philip Seymour Hoffman's climax scene. We should play it, actually.
Okay, here we go.
No, never kissed the dead guy with me, Johnny.
Gotcha! Jeez! Damn it! Holy...
Gallon Toucher!
Buck, stop him!
I'm here!
Come on!
You don't understand! Come on, Chuck! Oh, just let me sit down and just hatch this thing out!
I'm not gonna kill you, dead boy! Come here, you sticky dead Yahoo Toucher!
Chuck, let's discuss this.
Okay.
Well, I have a question about that. Do you think Johnny should have killed him, or do you like how it was like an accidental? Because it still would have been self-defense.
No, because I think if he killed, because I mean he's already the outcast.
Yeah.
And if he kills him, he's even more of an outcast. But the fact that she's like, no, it wasn't his fault, you know, because there's no way that like it was clearly not his fault. I mean, she takes offense to the fact that he eats, but then when she finds out that it was for her, she's okay with it. But I do think that, like, because he has to be a good guy. Like, he's only doing it to, because everything he does in this movie after he comes back to life, he has to get closer to getting her to prom, right? And so the only reason he eats Philip Seymour Hoffman is so that he can survive long enough to take her to prom.
I thought something was going to happen. Again, like, there was going to become... Obviously, there's this mysticism to it already because there's zombies involved and coming back from the dead. But I thought something was going to happen, like the clock, you know, strikes midnight kind of thing. Like, he has to get to prom. Like, I thought he was going to get warned again by, like, a Cloris Leachman or the, you know, Gravedigger or whatever we want to call his character.
Well, yeah, he's kind of... When he falls apart at prom, right? He gets to prom and it's just... That's a weird element too, like the body parts falling off. At one point, he dreams that his member falls off, right? Like it's.
Yeah, I mean, how many films are, you know, the only other film I can think of like a penis falling off is what Grindhouse is, the Planet Terror, right? Quentin Tarantino's just oozes
oh,
off.
Oh yeah, there's also a movie called Bad Johnson where the guy's
falls
off and becomes a full person.
I saw that trailer. I never got to see
it's,
that.
It's
movie.
Terrible.
I figured.
You saw the film?
Okay. Yeah. I think the thing with like body parts falling off is because this movie doesn't have a huge budget for special effects, because even when he's a zombie, he looks like himself, just like with a little bit of like, you know, white makeup, kind of, like, barely, you know what I mean? Like, he just looks like himself. So I think it's easier to, like, have a fake arm just fall off or an ear fall off than to actually show, like, degrading...
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point.
Body falling apart.
I didn't think about that, and I think you're right on the money with that one. It's kind of like just a budget thing. Like, if you see an arm coming off, it's not as, like, you know, like, if to have him actually decaying, considering the makeup we saw... would be completely different.
Yeah, he's just kind of pretty much gray. And then between his ear, his nose, his arm, those are dream sequences where worse things happen. But can we also get to another weird character, which is the doctor?
Oh yeah, of course. I don't know how we skipped this guy.
What was his deal? So he's trying to create a serum. He says he could cure him, but what's that?
Yeah, at first I think he's sincerely going to cure him, but then there's like this weird sexual dynamic with his assistant, and she kind of gives him the idea that they could make a lot of money off Johnny's flesh. So he creates that serum, and then he's hunting him down. And
So the two biggest conflicts is pretty much, it ends up being the doctor, and then, Joey, you said it before, what's the father's name? It's...
Big Chuck,
yeah.
I wanted to say Chuck Senior, but I knew that wasn't right.
Big Chuck, and Little Chuck.
Little Chuck, I love that.
Little Chuck and the mom. Okay, so that's Okay, well, we're going back to the parents right now. The parents have so many weird moments in this film. Number one, obviously, they're just their big general acceptance, which, again, is a comment on just, like, it's supposed to be your parents are always there for you. And then she's just says things like, okay, I made you a bologna sandwich. Like, well, just a bunch of weird things.
At one point, she's like, honey, did you by chance eat a boy at school today?
See, and the lines are, like, I think really underappreciated here. Because even back to when he's eating Philip Seymour Hoffman, and Missy says, oh, you just ate Chuck. And then I love his line. He just goes, well, not all of him.
There's some moments where I think they just had a very generic screenplay. And they were like, well, this isn't, you know, this is very boring. This is, you know, the usual. What happens if we just replace some words with eat and zombie and... it kind of falls into that, but I do honestly, the more and more we're talking about it, I like this movie more and more, and that's how it was while I was watching. Again, I wasn't on board, and then I slowly got into it, and I'm not trying to sell it as a masterpiece, but definitely I was in the middle as far as, you know, you don't like it, you really like it, and I keep getting sold more and more.
Yeah, it's all about buying in. Another thing I wanted to discuss is the whole, like, zombie slut shaming everyone gives Missy, like when everyone sees her with Johnny, they basically, like, I get it, she's dating a zombie, but in this world where, like, they're accepting a zombie walking amongst them,
yeah, zombies in their vernacular, they accept it. It's not like they don't question, wait, people can come back from the dead, you know.
It's almost like that if she dated Johnny and he wasn't a zombie, that, like, they still would have given her a hard time because she was this item with Matthew Fox.
This film was missing, like, a female character. Like, again, they were going for the tropes. I guess now I'm going more into spoof category, but I'm expecting, like, the girl character that liked Johnny all along, and it took him becoming a zombie to, like, realize... It just, I don't know, sometimes I thought that, like, I was going to predict it all the way, but it had some surprises to it.
Definitely.
Did you see that Peter Jackson was supposed to direct this?
No, I did not see that. What?
I know he has a early career, like, some of his first films were, like, horror films, correct?
Yeah, there's one that's really good. Hold on, let me find out what it was. Dead Alive.
Oh, yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
Which is, that's really kind of gross and weird. But yeah, he was supposed to do this. This would have been right between Dead Alive and Heavenly Creatures if he did everything. He was supposed to do it, and I think he turned it down.
Is
he
Dead
was
Alive,
offered the movie and turned it down.
Is Dead Alive the movie that the, like, I'm thinking of, like, you know, of that time, obviously, the VHS cover is, like, a woman and there's, like, a little skeleton in her mouth, like, peeking out.
Mm-hmm. A young man's mother is bitten by a Sumatran rat monkey. She gets sick and dies, at which time she comes back to life, killing and eating dogs, nurses, friends, and neighbors. So it's a horror comedy. It's sort of like this, you know, like somebody comes back to life, a family member, you know, whatever. It's.
And that was 1992.
Right.
Okay.
This.
I think he would have. You know what? I'm sad he didn't. I think he would have spiced it up a little bit more.
I think it probably would have had a different feel to it. But there are reasons that directors deny things, and maybe he said I can't do anything with this.
Yeah, maybe just was like, he was like, nah, I don't want to do something so similar again.
True. I mean, that's pretty funny.
Now he's an Academy Award winning director.
Is he? Oh, duh. I was literally like, for what? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The highest tied with Ben-Hur and Titanic, right? 11 wins. So Dead Alive, that's one of those covers. Again, so this was a movie I don't remember, like, you know, it was the trailer that I can think of, but the VHS cover of Dead Alive, and then the other one was always Tremors. That's kind of like a horror comedy, right? Tremors? Sci-fi comedy?
I never saw Tremors.
That's
one I haven't seen. That's on my list.
Wow, Kevin Bacon?
No, I know, trust me. You don't have to guilt me into a Kevin Bacon film. Well... that's not entirely true, but...
So, I mean, in the end, well, we said how it ends. He goes to the convenience store, and he goes up to heaven. They said, we made a mistake.
The heaven
courtroom.
They send
him back down.
Yeah, by the way, I don't think that guy's God, right? Like...
No, he's like...
No, he's like St. Peter or whoever.
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah.
And, well, he's kind of a dick, because he admits that it's really heaven's fault. But he still gives Johnny a hard time.
It kind of reminded me of, you know, like I think most high schoolers have to. I know when we went to the same high school, but did you have to go to traffic court like as in high school, Joey? Like to...
I don't even know what that is, so I'm gonna say no.
Okay, like when we were getting our permits, we had to go to, you know, we took driver's ed in school.
Okay.
And you had to go to like the local municipal and go to traffic court. So just from like that realm, and you would see so many like kids that got.
Yeah, I mean, like I've been to traffic court to fight tickets, and they just,
sure,
the way the judge treats you, I guess it's pretty accurate when you look at that, like the way the judge treats a kid.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like you saw, like most of the time, it was, you know, you saw people you were like going to high school with or that like graduated the year before, and they're driving around and went too fast and got a ticket, and then they're there. So point being, that just reminded me of it. Just clicked right now. It wasn't a thought I had before, but just the way that the you know guy at the gates is judging him like that, it reminded me of just another thing I could think of from high school.
It's interesting because normally when you see in films when they get this second chance moment that they go back down and do something, and really all he did was what he did before, take the bullet. It's just that the guy, I think, slipped on the coffee this time, right? Like, so.
Yeah, Eddie kind of saves the day, right? He hits him over the head.
Yeah, well, yeah, eventually there's like an ensuing fight, and then Eddie hits him over the head, and there's this whole, you know.
So I think that would have been, all right, better ending, Missy ends up with Eddie.
Well, considering that I feel like I'm the Eddie character, yes, then for me that would be a better ending. But I'm not sure.
Joey, you love the film. What are some things you would change about it? Or if you would?
I don't know if I would. I think because it's such a weird little movie that I'm okay with it as it is. Because I think with comedies, you always have to, you can't pick things apart. Like, you kind of have to not turn your brain off, but just accept the world that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with horror movies, too, and especially when you have them together. Like, you just sort of, like, these are the rules they're going to play by, and as long as they're consistent, like, the fact that everybody is on board, like, if there was a whole other sect of people that were just like, this is impossible, like, there can't be a zombie, like, that wouldn't fit in here.
No.
But the fact that everybody is on board with the fact that this guy is back from the dead, you know, they all know what a zombie is. It's not like The Walking Dead where just like, oh, we don't know what a zombie is, we're going to call them walkers or whatever. Like, that's, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Everybody knows what a zombie is. Everybody knows how a zombie, you know, sustains life.
Mm-hmm.
It clearly establishes the rules that it's going to play by, and it follows those. I like it.
Yeah, so I agree with everything you say, but then I'll say the one thing I would change then is just have these little moments of then in class, like, almost like, you know, again, to go to, like, a school reference, like, the new kid in class, and maybe, like, you know, if you have a, like, I remember one kid moving from, I forget what foreign country, but then the teacher took it as a moment to be like, so does everyone know where that, and it became like a quick little lesson, like a geography lesson, and we talked about, like, asked them a couple of things about the culture. It's probably, like, something simple like Armenia. But, it would have been great if there was just little injections, since they are comfortable and know and have the zombie vernacular and everything like that, just so, because we get a little bit. I thought that's where it was going to go, because he says about the woman and it's Cloris Leachman, then she has his things, then it should be like the parents are cool with it because they had a zombie in their family before. I thought there was just going to be, those are not big things, but just little injections would have.
I don't know. I wouldn't want to just confuse. Like I said, I don't want a deeper world here, a Matrix like thing where there's just like so many levels of stuff.
And that's why I'm not.
You don't want the My Boyfriend's Back expanded universe.
The Anna Boyfriend's Back. Well, I guess it kind of makes sense. There was an animated beginning. I gotta ask you guys this question: why do you think at the time it got only 14%? Like, obviously there was no Rotten Tomatoes at the time, but why do you think at the time the critics bashed this film?
So it's 1993 at this point. Just trying to think of like films that were coming out then. I guess it was the time of you had your comedies then were more in the, what, like Wayne's World was probably like one of the biggest comedies at that point. And then you had your action films to go to, like a Keanu. I don't know exactly. What year's, Joey, off the top of your head, Speed? What year is that?
94.
Okay, so, you know, year later. So you've got, you know what I'm saying? Like, those are your films that you got going on at that point. So I think maybe it was just like, oh, there's not a time and a place for this right now. That's my guess.
I mean, that's fair. It's just, do you think that if this came out today, it would be better received? Or, I mean, I guess the second question I'd ask is, like, does this have cult classic potential? I mean, I think to some it's a cult classic, but it's not, like, widely known.
So cult classic...
I think people should love it.
Yeah, and, well, cult classic is definitely one of those films. It's, like, not even, like, everything that people say are indie films these days. Like, indie films these days are recognized to have, like, millions upon millions, like, budget versus, like, those, you know, like, Pulp Fiction or even, like, a, you know, Spike Lee film or something. Was an indie film. So cult film, again, like, I mean, we've been discussing in recent days a future Philip Seymour Hoffman film, Big Lebowski, like, cult film. But it's also kind of mainstream. So it's, I don't know, there's just, I guess, all I'm saying is...
No, but there are these little films that people, that were underappreciated in their time, and then they, for some reason, gain more of a mainstream audience, a second life, if you will, kind of like Johnny, and they sort of and they sort of, you know, they develop this, like, almost hipster followings, and I think this movie kind of actually has that potential, and maybe, I don't know, maybe people will listen to our podcast and check it out. Where did you see the movie, Kyle?
Where did I see the movie? Where did I see the movie?
Did you see
I watched
the movie?
It on, I found, yes, I did see the movie. I found it online. I think YouTube.
Oh, it was on YouTube? That's great for you guys at home. I have Amazon, so it was on Amazon for me.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I've never had Amazon before. I could still, I guess, technically give up. It's still under my 30-day trial period.
Oh, okay.
But no, this, I'm sorry. Yep, it was Amazon.
Yeah, so you can definitely check this film out on Amazon and, you know, see for yourself.
I'm looking on Rotten Tomatoes right now, just the blurbs people write for the reviews, and this one, it was written in 2005, so it was before Philip Seymour Hoffman died, but this guy gave it a 0 out of 5.
Wow.
And said, the movie they ought to play at all future Philip Seymour Hoffman roasts.
What? That's offensive.
It well, seems like everybody pre-death. Here is saying that the premise doesn't work, people try to, like, it tries to be Heathers and it can't be Heathers. They say it's gross, which I don't think it's gross at all. People are saying it's an awful teen comedy. None of it works. All this different stuff.
It's definitely not gross. I mean, especially in this genre, not even close to, like, gross out.
I totally get what you're saying. Like, I mean, you can't nitpick every film. You just have to, sometimes you just have to sit back and enjoy it. And that's awesome that, you know, films, I'll probably say this multiple times over this podcast, films are art. Art is subjective, you know. Whatever floats your boat. So for me, like, I hear what those people are saying, but I'm definitely not on board with everything they're saying. But as far as it could have been a lot better, in my opinion. I think there's something there, because, again, so just zombie comedy, horror comedy in general, not a huge genre, and I loved the offbeat comedy in it. So all I'm saying is, yeah, I think there could have been more to it.
I can think of people I know right now who I could say, wow, they'll love this film. And I can think of people I know who they would hate it. They wouldn't even stand 10 minutes in it, and they'd walk
sure.
away.
I mean, there are, I think it's just ahead. I think it's just too early. I think it was just too ahead of its time.
Yeah. And like, that's kind of what I was trying to get at, right?
Zombie, like, comedy. There's Zombieland. There's Fido. There's Life After Beth.
Yeah.
There's Dead and Breakfast, which is not great. There's Dance of the Dead. There's Zombie Strippers. There are a couple that were recent.
Planet Terror, even.
Planet right. Terror. There was Burying the Ex with, rest in peace, Anton Yelchin and Alexander Daddario. That was not great. There was another movie, though, that came out the same year. Let me look it up really quickly. That was basically that premise. Like, my boy, and that's essentially this movie in reverse. That Anton Yelchin is dating a girl, she dies, and she comes back, and she's, like, super clingy. And it's, like, gross. Like, it's very bloody, and it's very, like, it's a comedy, but, like, the effects are, like, way over the top. So if people had a problem with this movie back in 1993, I can't imagine what they would have said about, like, Burying the Ex.
No. Can I tell you a film that I'm excited for?
What's that?
Bob Balaban's film before this. It's called Parents. Let me just read you a little something. It's rated R. It's 120 minutes, so around the same length as this film. That was a nice thing. It was a nice. I'm a fan of short films. There's too many long films these days, but I love the description of this film. A young boy living in the 1950s suburbia suspects his parents are cannibalistic murderers, and and it stars Randy Quaid.
What? I think you say Randy Savage.
That'd be cool. That'd be really cool.
All I can tell you is that this film, I'm going to check out. And I just really like that right away I see suburbia and I see cannibalistic, and this sounds like the almost our version of the film we were just discussing.
Oh, that's interesting. That's I guess that's what he was trying to go for.
Sure. He made like the more thought it was going to be more, you know, viewed, I guess, just for its PG-13 rating.
But, the movie that I was trying to name before, the one that's better than Burying the X, is this movie called Nina Forever. So if you want to see this in a modern day with a dead girl instead of a dead guy, check out Nina Forever. I really like it a lot.
Definitely will. I mean,
we're gonna have to make a list, Joey. I would love for talk sidebar after this and make a nice list for the Cage Club Network Facebook page. We can put on our page as well, and just kind of these recommendations of these horror comedies.
Well, because also, like, the thing is, like, horror is my thing. Like, horror is my favorite genre. Like, I have.
See, I'm not a big horror guy.
Yeah, so like, I think this worked really well because I like to see when genres sort of cross over in ways that like aren't super common.
Okay.
Like I like to see really funny over the top action movies. I like to see funny horror movies. I like to see like weird premises, and I think this worked. Like it just worked for me.
Yeah, I'm super surprised actually that this is not a more known film for just people who enjoy that genre. But again, maybe it will be.
I mean, it might be for people that enjoy that genre, but I guess the ultimate thing is we see that neither of the two leads of the film really went on, and we're talking about Philip Seymour Hoffman, Matthew McConaughey, Matthew Fox.
Well, I hope eventually the audience score goes up on Rotten Tomatoes for this. Maybe like that's what's shying people away from
seeing it.
That'd
be awesome. And people say, oh, yeah, P.S. I Love Hoffman.
Yeah, it was all Kyle. Once again,
it was all Joey. He's selling this film.
Very true.
So what's weird is that like my boyfriend's back. So I got really into Letterboxd recently, which is basically social media for film people. Mm-hmm. And only fewer than 800 people have seen my boyfriend's back. Bob Balaban's most popular movie is Parents, and only 1,600 people have seen that. So it's still not a ton of people have seen either of those movies.
Wow.
It is more common. But I mean, just for comparison's sake, the most viewed film on the site is Mad Max, which has like 120,000. So like there's a potential for like a lot of people. So for fewer than 800 to see this movie, I think that there is a real potential for this to become a cult classic if you know people who put on sort of, you know, weirdo after dark film festivals, or just are able to like rent out a theater or whatever. Like even like if the Draft House, like the Alamo Draft House put this on, like I think people like,
yeah,
this is exactly the kind of movie that they would love to show, because there's an audience that loves this movie, or that like, you know, stuff like Terror Vision from the early 90s or whenever that was from. It's just, it's these weird like crazy over the top, you know, memorable horror comedy,
definitely,
whatever gems. I love it.
Well, we're definitely, the three of us are frequent Alamo Drafthouse customers. Maybe we should talk to them.
Well, it's funny you mention Alamo Drafthouse. Actually, when I was watching this, it kind of reminded me of, again, not to get too hipster for you guys, but like being in, there's bars in Brooklyn that just show like movies in the back and projections. I mean, you've seen them. Even
we went to brunch yesterday, and they were showing Space Jam in Queens.
Space Jam, but like these are the kind of films that they show there. I'm just surprised that this hasn't caught on there.
I just think people don't know about it.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
Well, let's get the word out.
Let's be the lamplighters. Let's spread the word.
What you guys can do, I mean, aside from having it be on Amazon, you can buy the Blu-ray from BestBuy.com for like $7 or $8. So you can just buy a copy and just like loan it out, or just buy like 10 copies and just give it out to everybody, like be Oprah and just share the wealth of my boyfriend's back.
Yeah, that's actually cool. We could be, you know.
You get a boyfriend.
What's under your seat?
That'd be awesome. So anything else you want to say about this film, Kyle or Joey?
No, I'm at peace. I'm in the grave. I'm resting in peace. I'm like Johnny.
I just, I'm glad that I was here for this. I mean, the other movie that I'm going to do is so far, basically almost the other end of the spectrum from this in so many ways.
Yeah, not to spoil it, that's one of my favorite films, so I'm super excited to have you back for that.
Yeah.
So Joey, I guess, but before we let you go, what should people look forward to on Cage Club Network, I guess, this month or going forward? Yeah. What's
Plug
new?
It. Plug
so
it,
this
man.
Comes out, I guess, early April. So we, in theory, might have a new Cage movie this month.
Okay.
Vengeance, a Love Story, is close to happening. Cage is in like 6 movies this year. We already had 1.
Wow.
So
awesome.
We have 5 that we might do this year.
Gotta
so
pay for
good.
All those houses.
Beat me to it.
We are closing down on Keanu and Zac Efron. They're both going to end roughly September 1st.
Okay, so, okay, wait. What spurred Zac Efron?
Oh, because my friend who I do it with loves the movie We Are Your Friends, and he made me watch it, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. It's so good.
I have not seen it.
Zac Efron is a DJ, and that's pretty much all you need to know.
Okay.
He's like a struggling DJ. It's just...
I've seen that movie.
The leading actress is Emily Ratajkowski, known for her acting ability.
I've seen Charlie St. Cloud.
Charlie St. Cloud's amazing.
It's good. It's good. I just saw Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. I laughed.
It's funny.
Yeah, it's funny. And I'll definitely go see Baywatch.
Yeah.
You know, he's definitely... I remember... So I guess, you know, his big thing was Neighbor. I mean, obviously, he had like High School Musical.
Well, yeah, that's what I was just going to say, that like April is High School Musical month, that we just did all 3 High School Musicals, and we're putting them all out this month.
Ooh.
So High School Musical 1, 2, and 3. We're going backwards, going from new to old.
Oh, that's cool.
But because neither of us had ever seen any of those, we did the first one, then the second one, then the third one. So April 1st, 11th, and 21st are going to be the 3 High School Musical movies. So the first one's already out by the time this one comes out, but go listen to that. The first one's okay. The second High School Musical movie is amazing. It's so good. The third one's a disappointment. The first one is better than you think it's going to be. The second one is incredible. And then the third one is just like, oh, that's a bummer.
Well, that's the only one I've actually seen, the second one. That's the one.
It's so good.
They play baseball in that one, the second one?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a gay baseball song. Yeah.
I really don't dance.
I really like Zac Efron in Hairspray.
We haven't gotten that yet. That is going to be June.
That's a guilty pleasure of mine. Like, honestly, one of the things I liked about it the least was John Travolta. I think they could have picked something, but whatever.
Don't spoil for them.
Okay.
We also have a few other shows coming out later this year, a couple secret projects we have not announced yet. So just stay tuned to cageclub.me and facebook.com/cageclub, in addition to all your favorite P.S. I Love Hoffman spots. Oh, and also Cage Club Pod on Twitter. So we'll announce all the big stuff there. We might even throw announcements on this iTunes feed when new stuff comes out. But lots of movie things and more nostalgia things and lots of fun stuff. I mean, we just put it out and just hope you listen. So just same thing here. Like, you're basically doing it for yourselves. And just if people want to hear you talk about movies, then that's it.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest reason we started this again is because we just always constantly talked about movies, so figured might as well record it.
Yeah, we probably would be doing this anyway.
Maybe some films that we wouldn't have seen, which is great.
Yeah, it's awesome.
But, Joey, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much, man. Thanks for everything. Thanks for inspiring us, and thanks for...
yeah. And we just want to thank all of you out there. Remember, again, to go to Facebook, our Facebook page, where we'll be posting even more material between episodes, you know, some trailers, maybe some interviews, posters. And again, go to cageclub.me to check out not only P.S. I Love Hoffman, but shows like Cage Club, Keanu Club, Zack Attack, and you can always subscribe on iTunes.
Yeah, and most importantly, watch My Boyfriend's Back. Let us know what you think.
Woo! How you feel, Joey?
I feel great. I feel like Johnny Zombie. Oh, also, real quick, Johnny Zombie was the movie that they go to, or the marquee on the movie theater is Johnny Zombie.
Awesome.
So I feel like a real Johnny Zombie.
We're all Johnny Zombies.
No, I'm the friend.
You're the friend. Okay. And I'll be Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'd put an axe in my head accidentally.
You would.
Accidentally.
Oh no! All right, that's can't end stronger than that.
See you guys later.
I needed you so sex a thing. I believe in miracles.